For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.
Welcome to Megillas Koheles. So this book is a fascinating Megillah. The word Megillah itself is usually something that's rolled and that's more than just a letter or two. It's usually there's a certain amount of length to it, and that's it's not quite a book. It's a Megillah. It's a scroll. Koheles was written by Shlomo HaMelech, King Solomon, and he has was considered the wisest of men, meaning that in his time he studied wisdom, and he buried the secrets that he learned in the books that he wrote. And so we would all do well if we can pick it up. Now there's a debate about, he wrote three books. He wrote Mishlei, he wrote Shir HaShirim, and he wrote Koheles. Those are the three books. And there's a debate about what he wrote when. Everybody agrees that the last book he wrote was Koheles. And it's interesting, in a certain way, he seems like it's written from after having lived one's life. You know, it's like looking back upon life, this is what he discovered. In a certain way, that's kind of what you feel when you see Koheles. Shlomo is described that Hashem came to him in a prophetic vision and said, well, what would you like? Would you like some wealth? Like, who would, you know, would you like some honor? What would you? And he asked for wisdom. And Hashem said, you know, you asked wisely because you asked for wisdom, you'll get everything else. And so then you ask, well, who gave him the wisdom to ask for wisdom? But there's a certain amount of wisdom needed that a person is searching for the answers. If you're not looking for the answers, you're not going to find them. You're not even going to know to ask the questions. But that was Shlomo. We tend to remember the criticism. I don't know why that is. The Torah doesn't spare any of the great people. A very strong concept in Judaism is that people make mistakes, that we're human. Human means that we make mistakes. And sometimes people make a mistake if they think they're not human. You have to plan for making mistakes. And so we hear about the mistakes of our great people, and sometimes we like to focus on their mistakes, but actually from the mistakes that they make, it's relatively minor compared to the great things that they did. And Shlomo, you know, maybe we'll discuss later what some of his mistakes were, but most people remember that in the end, he was so great and so wise, and the Jewish people reached such a level of perfection during his time. He was the one who built the Beis HaMikdash. He built a permanent structure that would house Hashem's intense presence. And Hashem showed favor to him and to the Jewish people as a whole. But what happened was, he was so great that he wanted to bring in the Messianic era. He wanted to be the Mashiach. If you reach the top, you keep on going until you can't go any further, right? So he wanted to be the Mashiach. He wanted to carry the message to all the nations of the world. In those days, the only way you could really have an in to a country was to take a princess from that country. Even throughout the Middle Ages, even 100 years ago in Europe, if you wanted to do business with a country, you gave one of the princesses from your country would marry into the other dynasty, whether it was Russia or Britain or the Hungarian. And if you weren't open to that, then the country took it as a personal insult that, well, if you don't want to be family with me, then we can't interchange ideas, right? Because family you can accept ideas from. You may not like it, you may argue with them, but they're family. So if you're not open to being family, then you really don't want to speak with me. So in order to have influence in these countries, Shlomo married, took princesses from these countries. And the women in those days, when they went into a royal household, always adopted the religion of the monarch. Always. Even until our times. If you read about the Russian czars, every one of the princesses that they took from the Habsburgs and from the other, they always converted, they always adopted the religion of the monarch. And the women that Shlomo took also adopted the religion of the monarch. But when you have 1,000 wives, how do you make sure that they all accept everything fully? And many of them converted just in order to be Shlomo's princess. And that, unfortunately, was a mistake. And we all, you know, we were familiar with Shlomo's mistakes. But that's really not, that's not going to be the focus, but it's just, it always sticks in our mind. How could he be such a wise person? We have a different view. Some people, they like to portray it differently. You know, why did he take the, but if you look in Tanakh, it's very clear why he married these foreign women or the, you know, the, a very simple thing, if he were just a person that wanted, liked women, so to speak, then he wouldn't necessarily make them princesses. That wouldn't, you wouldn't have to marry them, or you wouldn't have to, they, especially in the Muslim countries, they had harems, they didn't make them all, Shlomo made them all princes, because again, it was a way to reach these different countries and teach them about Hashem. And if you look in the books of Tanakh, it worked. They, even in Africa, they heard about Shlomo HaMelech, and they sent people to Yerushalayim to hear about Hashem. That was really the beginning of the teaching of monarchy to the world. That's what broke down idolatry. Then, within a short amount of time after that, the idolatry started to crumble, because until then, people didn't even have anything else. They didn't know the concept that there's one God, that God the sun isn't the God, and the moon isn't the God, and the devil isn't the God. They didn't have that. And they came to Shlomo, and Shlomo taught. This book is called Koheles. Do you know what the word, anybody know what Koheles means? From the word Kehila, to gather. He made gatherings. Shlomo was gathered people together and taught them Torah and taught them wisdom. That's what he did. That's why he called this book Koheles. There was the Torah itself mentions that it's a role of a king to gather the people together and to speak to them. King is supposed to be in touch with them, and the Torah requires a king to have his own Torah with him. A king is required to write his own Torah and carry it with him, and the king was part of the role of the king was to ensure that the Torah was kept. And the king, there was a ceremony during Sukkot called Hakel, where the king would gather everybody together and he would speak. And Shlomo was known for that. That was one of the, that's why this book is called Koheles. He would gather the people. And today, sometimes people, when they want to have a class where they invite lots of people, they'll call it Hakel. They have there are a few places in New York that do that, Hakel gatherings, or the, it just means gatherings where everybody gets together. Everybody's invited. Everybody comes to learn from some great person. They call it Hakel. But it's in memory, it was reminiscent of the king of the Jewish people holding court, so to speak, where he would deliver a message. If you've ever been to the Hasidim, you get a sense of that. They've got people standing on the bleachers all over all sides, and there's this one, you know, delicate little, you know, usually it's an older man in the middle, and you can hardly hear him, and they're just waiting to hear those little pearls of wisdom come out of his mouth, and everybody's like crowded around, and you get a feeling of like, wow, you know, everybody just wants to hear what is being, sometimes you can't hear it all, you know, it's like, you find out later what was said, but that idea of coming to hear, to some extent that's what a sermon is, but it's more than that. It's a gathering of the entire Jewish people. It was only done at certain occasions, and again, it was done during Sukkot time. We read Koheles during Sukkot time, Shabbos Chol HaMoed Sukkot. That's the time we read it. And chances are that we'll still be learning it when we get there. It's depending on the holiday breaks and other things, so hopefully we'll have a chance to look at it. What does Koheles have to do with Sukkot? That's a mystery. Not too much of a mystery, but we didn't learn the book yet after we learned it then. But we should all be somewhere. Once a year we read the book. It's a very introspective book, looking back at life and looking at vanities and looking at... But what does it have to do with Sukkot?
Frailty.
Why is that a Sukkot message?
Frailty of the Sukkah.
Yes, very good.
And he brings that out, you know, frailty of man. And in the end... It's not us, it's God.
Very good, very good, beautiful. There's an idea that a sukkah represents this world as being like a temporary world, as being a world of just a... the sukkah is a temporary dwelling. And we're in this world, we're not here forever. No one's here forever. We're here for a temporary... It's a temporary place. We're here for a certain amount of time, And the sukkah represents being in a temporary place, that we're in a temporary, that we, and the focus of the sukkah is that what really counts is being under Hashem's, Hashem's covering this world is called like a sukkah. It's a temporary. We're here for a limited amount of time, and we have certain goals. But this is not it. This is not eternity. This is not forever. This is temporary. This world we pass through, and one of the messages of sukkah has to do with life being temporary and being that the four walls, that we live in are a temporary dwelling, and that we go and what really counts is dwelling with Hashem. That's our permanent. Where our permanent home is really residing with Hashem. That's the permanent place. But that's one of the messages of sukkah. And we're going to see that's very much one of his messages, is that some people get too caught up in this world. They get too caught up in different things that this world has to offer. And they don't realize that it's all temporary. It's not going to last very long, and it's not worthwhile. And that's very much the message of Koheles. Another part of Sukkot is that Sukkot is called Chag HaAsif. It's the holiday of the gathering, of when they harvested certain crops were harvested Sukkot time. That's why sometimes we decorate the sukkah with the things that are left over from the harvest, hanging from the schach or from the... what happens after a harvest is that a person might think, wow, I've got all this wealth, I've got all the grain, I've got everything. And so... specifically at that time, Shlomo wants to, the message of Koheles is when a person has harvested, and there was payday, you got your money, now what? What do you do with it? What is the meaning of life? What is the meaning of harvesting or gathering together? And so that's also a reason why it becomes a sukkah message. Some people that we'll see, they look at the book for like deep... spiritual, philosophical messages. And they are there. That's really not my goal to teach philosophy, to be honest, because it's not a study that we've spent time on, or that we'll touch upon some of it. But it's not, the focus really is to make ourselves familiar with the words of Tanakh, and then if we have time, we can always go into things deeper. But if you want to study philosophy, they see within the book of Koheles certain basic concepts. When they first came out with the book of Koheles, there was a certain point where they had the different works of the people that were written by prophets and by others, and they were trying to decide which books were meant for the masses, which books were meant for all generations to be part of Torah. So there were people that didn't vote for the book of Koheles. They felt it was a dangerous book, because if you take it at face value, there are things that can be distorted, can be taken out of Koheles. You can get very depressed. Oh, everything is vanity, it doesn't matter. So if nothing matters, then I'll go do what I want. But that's not what he said. So there was a huge discussion about the book of Koheles, whether it was a value to be a book that everybody would see and maybe not take it out of context. And in the end, they felt that if a person wants to see the wisdom in it, and he could take it from there. And if a person wants to distort things, they do that too. There are plenty of people that distort all kinds of books. You can't not include words of wisdom because somebody might distort it or learn it superficially. But there are things in here that, if you just look at them on a certain level, it sounds kind of strange. So that just tells us that you have to scratch the surface a little more. Okay, let's begin here. Divrei Koheles. These are the words of Koheles. These are the words of somebody that had gatherings to teach wisdom. These are the words of somebody that gathered together the elite, the brains, the people that all the Einsteins and all the Rambams and all the great brilliant people of the land of Israel gathered together to study the ways of Hashem, led by Shlomo HaMelech. And so these are these words. And it's even stronger than that, though, and that is that when a person has a history of his father was righteous, and then he's the son of that father, so he's trying to go in his father's ways. So he's Divrei Koheles ben David. These are the words of somebody who sought wisdom, who was the son of a righteous person, who was the son of Ben David. He was the heir to David HaMelech. He was the one that continued the path that David HaMelech did. And he was Melech Yerushalayim. He was king in Yerushalayim. It's very interesting how it doesn't say he was king of Israel or he was king. The fact that he was king in Yerushalayim has a special place in our heart as being a unique city for Torah. It's a city where special wisdom comes. That's the city we daven to. That's the city where the words of Hashem come from. Kimi Sion Teitzei Torah, from Zion, from all of Israel comes Torah. Udvar Hashem, you want to know the words of God? Go to Yerushalayim. And to this day, all the yeshivas, the really popular ones, many of them are in Yerushalayim. Sometimes it's become so popular, sometimes people feel Yerushalayim is too popular. They want to go out, you know, off the beaten track because there's too much going on in Yerushalayim. It's a, every block you have two or three yeshivas in Yerushalayim. If you want to know who Shlomo was, he was the one who was king in Yerushalayim, and he was in a king that was in a city where people wanted this wisdom. So his first words, and he'll come back to this, and this is it's very interesting, and that is that if you look at what is important to other people, if you look at what's important to the world, you look at different stages of life, what people run after, at a certain point, you see that it's all vain. Today, it's relatively easy. If you look at the entertainment sections of the newspapers or you look at what the royals are doing, or the royals are the ones with all the, you know, the fancy yichus, the fancy family life, and they are so messed up and so dysfunctional. And, oh, well, let's look at the wealthy people. They have money. Look let's imitate the wealthy people are just as dysfunctional as the royals. Well, let's look at the show business, the people who have all the honor and all the... there's a lot of foolishness that goes on in the world, it's easy to get caught up in. The word hevel, it means like air. It's like there's nothing to it, and it's easy to see it when you're not in it. It's like if you look at little children and they're talking about, you know, what the kinds of things they. So you sit there as an adult and hear them talking, and you say, you realize, you know, they're children. Wait till they grow up. And then you look at big children and you see what they're talking about, and you say, well, that's just because they... and it's because you've passed through that stage and you look back. A lot of people, especially in the United States, the goal is to have things. That's really the goal, to have the latest in the latest car, the latest cell phone, the latest vacation, the latest clothing. And our society is caught up into having things. If they only have things, then they'll be happy. And it really, it starts with the commercials and the advertising, and all the advertising is that you'll be happy once you get something. Once you get our product, then you'll be new and improved. Then everything will be great. Then you can, you get conditioned that way, that people like to go shopping because then they could get things. And they get things, that leads them to happiness. And it's so easy to get involved in that. Many people make more money than they can ever use. Many people, even though their family is the most important, they spend their whole time with making money because they're caught up into it. Because they, many times their religion is important to them or the most important thing, but money takes over. They gotta have it. They gotta do it. It becomes very important. And then when a person's old, then they realize, well, their health is important. Well, what do you mean? Their whole life they didn't take care of themselves. They worked and they didn't eat right and they didn't do exercise and they didn't. Well, their family's important. Well, their religion's important. But those aren't what people get busy with. They get busy with things that are foolish. They get busy chasing a dream. And so Shlomo HaMelech says that a person has to know that this world is full of a lot of hevel. There's a lot of things that there's air and there's nothing to it. We live in a society where the advertising is full of hevel. I get this all the time. People say to me, it says kosher, so why isn't it? I saw in the magazine, it says kosher, it says, so why should I question it? It says it's kosher. And I say, well, you know, if you open the back of a magazine, they'll say, well, you can lose weight when you're sleeping. You can say, you know, get 20 years younger. You can, if you're bald, you can grow new hair. And do you believe any of those things? And they say, well, no, I guess not, you know. And so why do you believe it if it says kosher? In other words, people make all kinds of claims, and if you'll send them money, then they'll make you younger. They'll make you 20 years younger. They'll make you do all these things. They'll make you a PhD. So why? There are many things in life that are not as they seem. That has to be the starting point. And that is that we have to question. We have to see what is real. It's just so fun. It's amazing to most people. My health is important. My family is important. My religion is important. But that's not what people do. They're worrying about their job. They're worrying about their money. They're worrying about having the latest. They're worried about entertainment. Some people travel, and it's almost like they travel for the sake of. They get in their minds that that's the end all, to just see the world. I got to go to every state. That's the most wonderful thing. It's almost like you go to an amusement park. What they do is they scare you. They make you, the greatest amusement park is if they could turn you upside down and go so fast that you were so scared. That's terrific. And if you go as an adult, you want to sue them afterwards that you hurt. They hurt your back and they scared you. You would never want to go on these. But kids are taught that the quicker they are, the scarier it is, the better it is. And then once they're taught that, they really feel that. And so they want to go on the fastest roller coaster, on the fastest. And you're an adult, and you say, why in the world would somebody want to do that? Why would you want to go upside down and be shaken in all directions? And, you know, if your car drove like that, you would take it back. You would say it needs to have you fixed. But it's just conditioning. Some of it is that they can brag in front of their friends. It wasn't that fun. Look, I raised my hands, and the girls all screamed, and we all. But it's all. There's so many things in life that people do, and do they really like it? Would they really volunteer for this? Well, if society tells them that it's fun, then they will. And that's what they do. And so sometimes a person has to take a step back and say, there's a lot of hevel in this world. There's a lot of air. There's a lot of things that people get involved in. What for? What is that what's really important in life? Is that if I have the latest whatever it is? Well, I had the old model. It didn't make me. Why do I need the new model? The old model was better than anything my grandparents ever had, or the new. You know, what's going to change if I have the latest, the shiniest, the newest? Is it going to be that much different? And so, that's a message that if we would learn that, and we'd be able to look at life that way and really be introspective about what really is important, our lives would be very different. And so that's his introduction to the book, is that this world is full of hevel. So the question is, why does he say it so many times? In this first verse, he says seven times, hevel is one, hevelim is two, is three. Omer Kohelet, this is what Kohelet says. Hevel is four, hevelim is six, and then hakol hevel, everything is hevel, is seven. So he says seven times hevel. We get the message, Shlomo. Why does he say it seven times? Anybody think of what the symbolism of the seven would be?
The week.
The 7 days of the week. In other words, every day of the week. In other words, everything. Seven always symbolizes the world or the days of the
physical.
The Medrash says an interesting thing. It says that life is seven stages. And each stage he looks at, and he was saying that each one of these seven, people lived typically around 70 years in those days. There's different stages of life. And at each stage, what's important to a person changes. And he was looking, if you evaluate each stage, he says it's all hevel. I'll read you the words in the Medrash. It's so interesting. He says there are seven worlds that a person sees in his lifetime. There's seven different. In other words, the person goes through different changes or different stations in life. So he says in the first stage, a person, he says, is like a king, meaning everybody hugs him and kisses him and says, "Oh, he's so cute." You know, that's the first stage. interesting that you get that at the very beginning of life, you know, you get hugged and kissed, and, you know. And then he says very quickly, you go to the next stage where he says that's similar to a pig that's in the mud. Meaning that the child is like crawling in the mud and putting things in their mouth, and you know, they're climbing in the, they put everything in their mouth and they're dirty, and then they start having their diapers get worse, and they that's the next stage. He says from the next stage, he says they're like a goat. They're jumping around. They're like searching, seeking out. And then he talks about the next stage where it says that a person is like a horse. A horse apparently likes to be all combed and pretty and seeks to have a life and have a mate. And then he says, then he talks about the next stage, a person like a donkey. And he goes through each stage in life. Basically, each stage in life has its foolishness to it. And you can go, you can watch the little kids and you hear what they talk about, and you say, wow, those kids are so, you know, it's so funny to be a kid. But you know what? You can go to the nursing home and you can hear what they talk about, whether it's whatever that is, you know, a bingo, or did they like the lunch today? Didn't they like the lunch today? Or whatever it is. And it also could be foolishness. You know, it's just every stage in life has its foolishness, has its, things that a person can lose their focus. They can lose what's really, really important in life. And again, he's going to get to that, but a person first has to realize that there's a lot of air out there. There's a lot of things that are going on that are just, there's nothing to them. And so that was his message, that Hakol Hevel, everything has a lot of this hot air or a lot of this air to it. Verse 3. Ma yisrim adam b'kola molo. What does a person gain? In other words, we work hard all our lives. What do we gain from our work? What is the benefit of all our hard work? What are we working towards? What's our goal? Ma yisrim adam b'kola molo. What is the person's gain? What has he achieved or accomplished with his work? That he's worked under the sun. Very interesting. Now, they ask this question, what do you mean under the sun? You can't work above the sun. Some people understand what he means is that there's work towards this world, and this world is temporary. In other words, whatever you accomplish in this world, in the end, you don't take it with you. And so, what profit do you have for the work that you've done under this world, in other words, under the sun? If you work towards spiritual things, those things last forever. Those things you take with you. Those things will be here after a person is long gone. In other words, if a person has a good name, if a person has done things that made the world a better place, those continue on. On the other hand, if a person built a house, if they got a lot of wealth, if they did they built up their bodies so they were strong or they were beautiful or whatever that was, when they leave the world, they won't take that with them, and it won't be theirs. It won't be in their hand. It won't be the same. So what a person has to look at what they gain from the work in this world. What is the benefit to that? That seems to be the focus over here. Like what am I working for? What is it all for? What is the, where am I hoping to get? Verse 4. Dor ha'luchu dor bo. And you have to look at history. Like one generation comes and then another generation comes after it. And what changes? What things last? Do people remember the earlier generations? What did they do? What did they accomplish? V'ha'aretz la'olam edus. And the earth is still here. It's a funny thing, you know, when you look back and you see there were other generations that came beforehand and they worked and they accomplished what they, and they're gone. And what did they leave over? What do we have from them? For all the things that they did, you have to see this in terms of history. What's the value of what's here? The Zoruch Hashem is very interesting. This is the Fiddler on the Roof. He took this from Sunrise Sunset. That's the that's a little bit what he took. V'zoruch Hashemesh v'bo Hashemesh. That's the sunset and the sun comes and the sun goes. This expression a very interesting idea that in each generation there'll be a sunrise, there'll be a sun to each generation. In other words, when the sun sets, and the sun, it represents like a righteous person or a good person or a great person, he goes, but then there'll be a new sun, just like every day the sun goes down, but it comes up again the next day. So too in generations, there are great people, there are good people, and they passed away, but there'll be new good great people in the new generation. And we believe that. In other words, a lot of people, they get caught up into, well, previous times they had really great people, but who do we have in our time? We don't believe like that. We believe every generation has, it's a promise, really. In other words, v'zoruch ha-shemesh v'bo ha-shemesh, that sunrise, sunset, there'll be new people are replaced. Every generation gets their righteous people, gets their people to look up to, gets their leadership, That's part of the cycle that Hashem wants, is that every group of people will have righteous people and good people and people who to learn from. Sometimes they are tailor made for that generation, which, you know, sometimes people, they say, well, if only I was alive when the Rambam was here, when this rabbi was here, when the Baal, then I would be a divot. Today, who do we have? But he's making a mistake, because in that time, the people didn't necessarily know how to respect their leaders or see the greatness either. A person has to realize every generation has they have to look for the righteous people or look for the good causes, but they're there. A person shouldn't say there's nothing for him to accomplish. There was a it's true that there was a, you know, tremendous goals and tremendous things to be accomplished in the last generation, and there are tremendous goals to be accomplished in our generation. That's the each generation, sunrise, sunset. That's this v'zoruch ha-shemesh, the sun shines and the sun comes and the sun goes, but there'll be it's a constant. I'll read you the words. It's from the Medrash. V'ki ein anu yodim shezoruch ha-shemesh. We know the sun goes down and the sun comes up. Can't King Solomon say something wiser than that? Why does he have to tell us? Sunrise, sunset. Beautiful. What does it come to teach you? Until the sun sets of one righteous person, the son of another righteous person comes. Before Sarah died, Rivka was born. In other words, before Hashem took Sarah from us, he made sure that her replacement was already here. As it says, if you look in the Torah, it says, Besulo Yolidus Rivka, and then it says, Vitama Sarah. And so there's always a, the Cain, the cold over the door, and it's like that in every generation. That I would just say, sometimes we look for a person who's righteous to be in the light, you know, and carry a sign, I'm a righteous person, or it's not that way. A righteous person, maybe they're here in this room, you know, there are some of us people here that come to class in the middle of a Monday afternoon or there are special people, righteous people in every community, in every place. There are people that dedicate their lives to others. There are people that take very little from this world, there's no question that the world exists in their merit. There's just no, and they might say, well, they're the only ones doing it, you know, and they're really self, you know, if you're, sometimes you meet people like that, you know, you're lucky enough to, that they really, they just live for others. They love people, they love Hashem, they love Judaism, they love their, whoever it is, and they don't seem to need things for themselves. They live for others, and they do things for others, and they give up things so they can take care of others. These people are, you don't need somebody who has a sign, I'm a tzaddik, you know, to be a tzaddik, righteous person. In other words, there are people that that are selfless, that are just very giving people that are in every generation. And so did people know who Sarah was? Did they know who Rivka was? Maybe they did, maybe they didn't. You know, Rivka is this little girl. Somebody's coming to the well, and all she can think of is maybe they're thirsty. You know, maybe their camel's thirsty. You know, isn't that great? I mean, that on a very basic level, what child thinks like that? But that was her whole life. She thought like that. You know, can I? She didn't think, well, you know, he's big, let him do it himself. You know, that's how we would say, you know, that. But she didn't, that didn't occur to her, right? That wasn't her way of thinking. Her way of thinking was, you know, he's a stranger, he just came through the desert, maybe he's thirsty, I'll get him some water to drink. Because why? Because if somebody's thirsty, I want them to be refreshed. I want to do that for them. And the donkey for sure is not going to pay her back, right? The donkey doesn't, the camel, I mean, the camel's not going to, but there's this idea that there are righteous people in every generation, there are righteous people in every, and even though there were very righteous people, sometimes we don't recognize them until they're gone. That's another problem that we have.
And the Lamed Vav Tzaddikim.
Right. That's.
I was thinking of your wife.
Okay.
Every word you said.
I won't deny that, but that's the. there's some people. There's in the Parsha it says Achrei Mos and then Kadoshim, and it is true that sometimes we only really see people after they pass away. We don't recognize them for who they are. You know what they do or the. But it is important to realize that they are here. In other words, there are people that are really good people. Now. Even good people, there are different stages. There's a certain point in their life. If you ever look at like the four sons in the Seder, you have the good son and the wicked son and the wise son. And so somebody said, well, what if I only have daughters? Or what if I don't have four sons? Or what if I don't have any sons at the Seder? And the answer is that, one of the answers is that the four sons really represents each person, that at different points in their life, there's a point in your life where you want to be wise, and there's also a point in your life where you want to rebel a little bit. You know, that you're a wicked son. What do I need this for? And then there's a point in your life where you're simple. I just want to do the basics, and you know, and each person goes through different stages in life, and the answer is you have a Seder based on that stage where you're at. So there are stages where a person finds it easier to be selfless and dedicated. And then there's another stage where you want to take care of yourself and you want things for yourself, which is true. But I think that a person should see, though, that there are righteous people around us. There are each generation has good people, and most people find every community has good people. They're hidden. And they, you know, again, it's not people don't carry a sign, but you run into people every now and then that are Hashem's presence rests on them or the deeds that they do. So let's continue on verse 5. On the Kamushoyt Zoruchusham, and the it goes back to its place and then it rises again. In other words, we're here for a certain amount of time, and the light shines, meaning that the righteous person or the good person, we benefit from their light, and then they go, and then there'll be another righteous person who we benefit from their light, or we grow from. Verse 6. Holach Ol Dorim, it goes to the south, the Sovev El Sof, and then it goes to the north, Sovev Holach Haruach, Asvivav Shav Haruach. Goes in all directions. It's interesting that there's no monopoly on the directions of where the sun shines. In other words, it's not only in Brooklyn, it's not only in Israel, it's not only the sun shines everywhere. The righteous or the impact of a tzaddik goes in all directions. Verse 7. Kol hanecholim holchim alayam. All the rivers lead to the sea, v'hayam einu mole, and the sea doesn't get filled. Al makom shenacholim holchem sham, the place where it goes, that's where the waters go back. Now, some people say the waters are a metaphor for wisdom. That all wisdom, you can, if you study wisdom, you never finish. You never have learned it all. You'll never feel the study of wisdom doesn't. It's always described as water, like life giving water. When you study wisdom, just like water refreshes a person and it causes him to grow. That's one of the reasons we study Torah, because it helps us grow. It wakes us up. It refreshes. It's life giving. But just like these rivers go and you don't get full, you learn and you say, well, I learned this last year. Well, every year you do the same parsha, but you don't get full. You look at it differently. You grow, and water is life-giving. And so the rivers go to the sea, and the sea is never full of all these different forms of wisdom that come. And many people will learn things. The Gemara talks about learning things 101 times. There's one rabbi learned several hundred times. And you might say, well, why do you got to learn it so much? You learned it already. Like the... It's very interesting. You know, we have this idea people study, they study their whole lives. And some people, well, didn't you finish already? Like in the secular world, you go to college and you finish and then that's it. You're done studying. But with us, studying life, the sea doesn't get filled. In other words, the life-giving waters are a constant area of growth for us. We constantly seek to rejuvenate ourselves from these life-giving waters. And in a certain way, they go back to their source. We always see water as connecting to the source, water representing the wisdom. That's why when we go to the idea of a mikvah, purifying, is that it comes straight from Hashem. In other words, it's the world was created, it's like the life-giving waters of the... we believe that to some extent when man picks water up or when he does things, we're human and we make mistakes. And so... when you go to a mikveh, like a convert is a non-Jew, they go to a mikveh and they become Jewish, or before a person can go in the Beis HaMikdash, they have to go back to the water. They have to go back to they have to be aware that we live in an imperfect world of humans that by definition are imperfect, and go back to the world of Hashem who is perfect. And so that's symbolized by going back to the water, going back to the sea, going back to that there is a world that's not touched by human imperfections. And then we that brings us to holiness. That's why we go to the mikveh. That's why we... so that's all symbolized over here by all the waters go to the sea. And the sea means we go back to our source. We go back to the life-giving waters. He doesn't make clear what the waters represent here in the book. He kind of leaves it for us to figure out where the waters travel to. And it could be he's exploring the wisdom of creation. But we'll stop here at verse 8.
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.